Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Listening to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast.
Welcome to the Orchestra Teacher Podcast. This is episode number 68. And I'm really excited about our 2024 episodes. We just recorded one with Jessica Billings White from Boston. And today I have a very special guest, not necessarily orchestra teacher, but a teacher and one who has done some awesome work in our profession for many years. And I wanted to welcome Miss Martha Mook to our podcast. Martha, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. It's really great to have to sit and talk with you.
Absolutely. I've been a fan for a long time, seeing you at ASTA and things, and we've talked a few times here and there, but really want to learn from you today and share all the awesome things that you're doing with Eclectic Styles, your university program, your outreach, your performances. So just tell us a little bit about you and your background and what you've been doing for the last several decades in our profession.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I would say is that I'm a proud product of the New York City public school systems.
Wow.
And starting in Staten Island, and that's where I started to play the viola, and I started on the viola. So I definitely would not be where I am without having those programs in the New York City public school. So I'm a big supporter and proponent of public schools.
Public schools, but same here. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am today without public school program, and I'm very fortunate to have that opportunity to learn strings starting in fourth grade. And I was the only one in our county that had strings, and I was from Northeast Ohio. And it was really nice. So I totally am right with you on that.
Yeah, and that's why it's important for what I'm doing now to be able to help those programs grow. Mm-hmm. So let's see, I have a master's degree in viola performance, and that was always going nice and innocently and acoustically and classically.
What happened?
Well, a friend of mine gave me an album of Jean-Luc Ponty.
Yes.
Actually, towards the end of my high school career. And I would say that's we didn't have emojis back then, but if we did, after listening to, it was A Taste for Passion, and he's playing this beautiful blue five-string Barkus Berry violin. And my mind just went,
wow.
And
yeah,
that was definitely the turning point. I can say that I discovered something I never knew. Violins, strings could sound like that, that they could plug in, that they could improvise, they could play all these styles, they could get electronics. It really was a revelation.
Yeah.
And I think within the next week or two, I had my parents drive me into Manhattan when there were still all those music stores on 48th Street. And we went to Manny's, and I bought that Barkus Berry, that same blue Barkus Berry. I still have it.
You do? Awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And so that just set you into a new dimension.
Totally. And I mean, this was back in the, you know, turn of the century.
I have a beep button I can pull up if you want to say the beep it out there.
I'm kidding. It was before 1990. Uh-huh. So I was 2 years old and no.
Yeah.
And we, you know, there weren't all these cool digital effects processors and things, you know. You had to buy all these big
line up the pedals, right?
The pedals, and actually I don't know if you can.
Sure. I can see your rack. Yeah, the rack system. Yeah, the rack of equipment there for sure.
Yeah, my original jam man, my original looper Yeah, you could do like 8 seconds, but you could buy the, you know, expansion to 32 seconds. And my this is Quadriverb. I mean, I wrote a lot of my first material on this using this gear.
That's cool.
And then I had to learn how to play it on other gear because, you know, gear just keeps evolving.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, it's getting easier to use and cheaper. So I'm looking at getting a looper and just exploring the different ones. And I've gotten some recommendations from Chris Howes and a couple other people who have used them, you know, and I have to take the plunge and just get one. So maybe you could tell us as a beginner's guide to what to look for. And, you know, obviously people will go in and with a certain budget and that kind of thing. Yeah. So that would be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, back then, there were no school programs that, you know, that could teach you how to play. I mean, maybe there was you know, some schools had jazz programs, but almost no string players.
Right. Yeah.
And certainly not working with electronics and, you know, and live instruments. And so I really started to explore the realm of electric instruments and repertoire. There was no repertoire, so I had to start creating the repertoire.
Yeah.
For it, and it was all a big process of experimenting. Also finding, I didn't learn jazz. I wasn't taught, you know, improvisation.
Right.
In the jazz sense.
Yeah.
And throughout my career, after I got my master's degree at UMass Amherst. I had gotten my bachelor's at SUNY Albany, well, University of Albany.
Okay.
And so also public. I didn't go to conservatories either.
Yeah, yeah.
I went to public universities.
Yep.
And because I also was working and running as a stage manager, as a house manager, learning all the different aspects of what it takes to put a production together.
Mm-hmm.
And it really served me well because over the course of my career, I've also been on a lot of tours. The first tour I ever did was The Music of Andrew Lloyd Webber with Sarah.
Oh, cool.
And then I toured with Barbara Streisand for a couple of years.
Wow. I bet you have some fun stories.
I have amazing. It was an amazing experience. I toured with Star Wars in Concert for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
80-piece orchestra, you know, playing John Williams.
Yeah, great music.
You know, and high definition screens and lasers and pyro and the whole thing.
Neat.
And so I've really had some amazing experiences that have really informed how best practices, let's say, not only as a performer, mm-hmm. not only as a player, but as a performer and what it takes to be a performer.
Right.
It's not just the playing.
Well, then you have also composing.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's that whole other, that's a completely different aspect of music and interacting and distributing and all that. Yeah.
Yes. And that is also something that I work with my students. So something I learned to do was how to notate my music, how to notate the effects, how to notate the new kinds of techniques that I was adapting for my music. I use a lot of percussion, techniques with the bow and with my left hand. I've written works for orchestra and concert band as well. Mm-hmm. And it's always, it's like the electric viola is a transposing instrument.
Yeah.
And so what I need to do, usually if I'm writing for a large ensemble, is to have the line that I play, and then the line that the conductor hears or mm-hmm. that else hears. So when you're using digital effects and you've got some delay on there, maybe some echo, a little bit of reverb or something, and you play one note, the one note doesn't necessarily mean you're going to hear one note.
Right. Yeah. No, when you have an echo, you're going to hear it, and you don't notate that. You just notate the one note, but you have to put in the notes that you're using.
Right.
An echo or reverb or delay with these settings or approximate settings. Yeah.
And that's where also it's not just da, 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 but I discovered on my, you know, experimenting with the different delays that you can have all kinds of rhythmic patterns that emerge.
Right.
And one of the first ones that in the piece I wrote for the first piece for concert band, which I adapted also for orchestra, is called X-ing.
X-ing.
And that was written for Arizona State University.
Cool.
And it was a co-commission in and also Ridgewood, New Jersey. And and I had to figure out, I plucked one note and I got an effect that said ba-da-da-da-da, ba-da-da. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Let's do that. And then I learned how to notate that for my line. And then I incorporated that into the score so that the acoustic
was
also doing da 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 at different times.
Right. And, but they have, it has to all line up. That's the challenge. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
But I never, you know, I didn't go to school for composition either. So, you know, it really, my whole career has just been about experimenting and learning and taking the time to try out different instruments. I was introduced to the emerging markets at Yamaha, and they were just putting out their first line of, they called it silent violins.
Silent violin, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I got a prototype of it, and I was asked to evaluate it. And I said, I love this. The whole point was, you know, to put your headphones on and listen and not disturb the neighbors.
Yeah.
But I want to, you know, I said, I want to plug it in and I want to play it loud.
Too. Yeah. You want to be able to do both.
Yep. So they had to kind of do a redesign, and I went, then that went further, and they invited me to Japan to work with their design team.
Cool.
in Hamamatsu and out of that came the silent viola, and the electric, what they call the EV series,
right?
Which I still love.
Yeah.
They've moved on from that, but they keep evolving as well.
Yeah.
And this is one of my favorite instruments behind me, the Yamaha, the YEV.
That's what I have. I have mine here. Yeah. I just bought it. I bought it used. Got the greatest deal, $275.
Whoa.
And it was like brand new. So I was very lucky, and I love it. It's so fun to play, and it's so easy to play. And
I have a few of them, and this is actually customized to a viola length. So,
oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, mine's violin sized.
Yeah, I have a few customized instruments because, you know, viola soul, I need that extra length of the
right.
You know, so over the course of my career as a student, as a professional, I mean, I've played Broadway, I've played in ballets, I've played operas. So, I still have a foot in the classical world.
That's
and
great.
I love it.
Yeah.
I have a string quartet that, we were just nominated for a Grammy, by the way.
Wow. Congratulations. So that it was the album that you put out was nominated, I'm not sure how it all works. So tell us.
Yeah. So Scorchio Quartet, which is a quartet that I put together in 2001.
Oh.
That's okay. A whole other story. I'm going to drop some names. David Bowie came to a show that I did at the Cutting Room in the end of the year 2000. And I had this through a mutual friend. And a few days later, I got a call from Tony Visconti, who is, I had met previously and was doing sessions contracting. Mm-hmm. You know, David Bowie's longtime producer and amazing, legendary producer. And Tony called and said, David wants to know if you can put a string quartet together to play with him at Carnegie Hall for the Tibet House benefit concert that Philip Glass produces.
That would be a yes.
Yes, that I could. Yeah. I'm like, well, let me see some of them.
That's amazing.
And yeah, and that was another one of those experiences.
Yeah.
Got to work with David, and then we played with him for the next three concerts.
It's a great picture, by the way.
Year, thanks. That was back to Carnegie.
Yeah.
And then we recorded with him on his album Heathen, and wow, a few other projects. So that's where Scorchio started. And then over the years, David did it for 3 years, and then Philip just kept asking the quartet to come back because everybody wanted to play with a string quartet.
Yay!
So that's just been an incredible experience.
Wow!
As well, and we've played with everybody from Lou Reed, Laurie Anderson, Trey Anastasio, Iggy Pop, Rozelle, the beatboxer, and who I later collaborated with. And we did a work called Beats Per Revolution for beatboxer, electric violist, and improvising chamber ensemble. So we have strings, winds and brass and percussion. And we've done that a few times.
Very
I make it up as I go along. And if it doesn't exist, I make it exist.
That's amazing.
And so a few years ago, I've been doing a lot of educational events over the course of my career, and a lot through Yamaha and being at the ASTA conferences pretty much every year for the last 20 some odd years. I also have done many of the regional conferences, NISMA, Pennsylvania, and Maine, and many more.
Yeah.
And as well as Jen, and what preceded Jen, the jazz.
For those that don't know, Jazz Education Network. I'm not sure if all the string teachers know Jen, but yeah.
Yes.
Great.
So, and that's where the string presence in the jazz world has really picked up considerably.
Good.
Over the last 20, 30 years. I mean, Jean-Luc Ponty's been doing this since the 70s.
Yeah.
Not the first one either. I mean, there's a long line of amazing jazz fiddle players, violinists, and other styles, many other styles, fiddle, Americano, bluegrass, et cetera. So strings playing different styles of music is not a new thing. But bringing it into the conservatories and bringing it into the legitimate world,
mainstream, where it's into the education area and secondary ed and collegiate world, and so that I guess that brings me to, maybe you can talk about your very unique program that you have at university.
Yeah. So. In ASTA, at the beginning, they called us alternative strings.
Right.
Because we weren't just jazz strings. We were all
alternative styles.
It's like alternative styles as compared to what? As compared to classical?
Right. It sounded very,
Yeah. And then after, nobody liked that name. Especially those of us, that were all alternative. So then they came up with eclectic. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of still holding. And
do you like that term?
Well,
or do you have something different that you would like it to be called? Or
One day I woke up and I'm like, I don't sit down to write eclectic music or to necessarily play an eclectic style. Mm-hmm. And the term multi-style sort of popped into my head. And that was also at the time when I had been asked to put a string program together at New Jersey City University.
Okay.
They had a string program years ago when it sort of
fizzled.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So when they asked me to refizzle, I said, I'm going to suggest, based on my whole career experience and all the information that I've culled over the years, that we don't need to start another classical string program because we're right across the river from Juilliard, from Manus, from Manhattan School, from NYU, and we're
very
on the
well
same
established, yeah,
as other classical music programs. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote down a paragraph of what does multi-style strings mean. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, it was my career where taking the basis of what the style, I started on classical, but there's players that start on jazz. They start, right. They start on other styles, and that doesn't negate them from the opportunity of playing other styles. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in a recording session years ago with classical string players, and there was no music in the studio, or they had just, it was like a lead sheet, but it was a rap record.
Okay.
And the classical players, they played the notes because they're taught how to play the notes exactly. Mm-hmm. And the producer is like, can't you swing or can't you, feel it? And it was so far out of their element.
Right.
And so I found it was easier for me to adapt. And so I put I put a proposal together to create a new program that now I've been, impressed by and inspired by different programs like at Berklee College.
Sure.
Music.
Right.
And out in California, School of the Arts and things like that. So I know that, and entrepreneurship programs, music business programs.
That's important, yeah.
But they're all sort of, all of these programs at the different schools, were different programs and not necessarily a consummate kind of a program or, mm-hmm. Or a degree. And so... that was really what the intention was, a multi-style string program. We had to revise because the performance degrees were either classical or jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
And so with multi-style, now we have all different styles. And then I have a lot of contacts in the industries, and I called some good friends like Regina Carter and Jeremy Kittle and Dave Egger and Joe Denenzone. And I'm like, I'm thinking of this program. What do you guys think? And they all loved it, especially because New Jersey City University is a public university, which means it's also a fraction of the cost.
I was going to say affordable, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there are some scholarships, but the fact is we have this amazing talent on the faculty. We are literally 20 minutes from New York City. Mm-hmm. So my students are in the city all the time, gigging and going to concerts. And we have things, arrangement agreements with the New York Phil and the Met Opera, that the students can go and sit in and watch dress rehearsals and things. So we're in a great location. So I can bring people in from the city to come and do master classes or guest art, you know, residencies.
Yeah.
We just had the, you know, John Benitez, also amazing Latin jazz bass player, composer, Grammy, multi-Grammy winning. And he's been working with the students on rhythms and helping us with some of the concerts.
It's amazing. That's a great resource to have the city right there. Yeah. And so many talented folks there that can just pop over for something like that.
Yes. Yeah. And then we have Yamaha has been very supportive because they've been a, you know, real advocate of music education.
Yeah.
For a long time. And so, you know, I basically brought half of my studio into the studio at New Jersey City University. Now we have a studio that we call the Lab.
Cool.
And it's got a combination of Yamaha instruments and other instruments. I mean, it's not an exclusive Yamaha.
Sure. But they're a big supporter, it sounds like.
They're a big supporter. Yeah. Eventide, I have been using Eventide electronics, audio processing gear for many years. And they have been also very supportive. So now we have a lot of, and it's that's top quality.
Right.
Gear.
Yeah.
This is the newest pedal that came
H90.
Out.
H90. Okay. 90.
I wish I had it plugged in to show you what it looks like, because it looks gorgeous and the sound is just incredible.
And is that just an effects pedal, or is it effects and loops? Is it just?
It's a multi-effects.
Multi-effects.
Mm-hmm. And so it can do reverb. Reverb is incredible.
Uh-huh.
That's one of my favorites. And it's and delay and you know, flange and chorus.
Yeah.
It just goes above and beyond shimmer effects and combinations. And just for me, I sit there either, you know, with my headphones on or just exploring, and it puts me in a whole different sonic universe. And
that's so cool.
And what that does is also it defies my sense of expectation of what it, you know. So when I'm composing a new work, I don't necessarily, you know, just take a piece of manuscript paper and a pencil.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what I'm capable, what sounds I'm capable of producing, of creating.
You can't write that down. You have to listen and go through and figure it out. And sometimes you just discover things, right, that are like, well, that sounds really cool. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I've written some articles and some blogs on how I figured out how to notate what I do. A lot of it has to do with screenshots of... because the control, for example, for a lot of these pedals, you can control it through your, you know, your iPad.
Oh, okay. So it has a companion app.
Yeah. And I learned to do this a long time ago, back before that, was notate exactly how much reverb I'm using, how much setting. So that if I need to transport it to another piece of equipment, and this is, my hope is that other people will play my music.
Yeah.
But I don't expect everybody's going to have the same exact gear that I have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I've always taken notes exactly how much of the effects, what the balance is, what the mix is between the original sound and the affected sound.
Yep.
And I mean, it's so much more advanced now than it was back in the day.
Right.
You know, three buttons and you only had a few different.
Right.
So that's another element of what we do in the program, in the mm-hmm. multi-style strings program. And I also, that necessitated creating a new course.
Cool.
They didn't have a course that could teach performers and composers how to work with foot pedals even, I mean, you know, Ableton Live and MSP, those were just in their infancies years ago when I started. Yeah. And now they're necessities in your studio.
Right.
And it's a learning curve for me because I need to keep stepping up my game.
Yeah. Well, they keep getting I feel that most of the technology, it gets obviously better, but sometimes it gets a little bit more complex too. And you have to figure out, okay, there's a lot more menus, there's a lot more buttons, there's all these different things you have to figure out. Yeah.
Yeah. And yet that also makes you spend the time with it. I mean, that's how I originally learned, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how many manuals I've read. I really haven't read too many manuals.
You like to experiment for sure.
And I, you know, certainly I have students that are so much more well-versed in, you know, with Ableton and with Push and with programming and incorporating lots of other gear in there. And that's great. I mean, I tell them right away, I don't know all the styles.
Yeah.
I don't, but I can help facilitate you in that direction.
Yeah.
And that's why I bring in the big guns, you know, the people that do have the, you know, the experience and the expertise in different styles of music. And if I've students coming in that want to study, you know, some other style, well, we're in New York City. I can call people up and, you know, come teach klezmer, teach, you know, Indian style, teach whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another advantage of, you know, of being where we are.
Right.
As well.
Yeah. So, well, that's, it sounds like university has, you know, really taken to the program and trusting you to build it and see it grow. And then, you know, with the understanding that you have the connections and it, not anybody can come in and do that, but you have those connections of adjunct faculty and clinicians and things like that that really set it apart from another place or another, you know, another program.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's where having, you know, team spirit or the collaborative ideology. And so they provided and you know, created the opportunity for me to it's a brand new program.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
when did you start this?
So this is our fourth year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We've graduated three years. Well, we started during COVID.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I started putting this plan in place before the fall of 2019.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect timing.
Yeah, right. Perfect time to start a new program.
Yeah.
And what happened was the master's program took off.
Well, and I was going to say there's, you know, a lot of our listeners are maybe looking for a degree program to do. Obviously, this is a tough one to probably do via like distance learning or online. There's probably there's not that component, if I'm understanding it right. It's all in person.
Mostly, yeah. I mean, we had to do online during COVID, but
and it's a two-year degree for the master's.
The master's, it's 2 years.
Great.
Mm-hmm. and we would, there is a certain amount of online that we can do in, you know, in terms of private lessons and things, mm-hmm. but there's nothing that can take the place of coming together and playing with each other.
That's right.
You just, the energy in the room, the that collaborative spirit. Again, my students have been collaborating in ways I don't think they thought they would be.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I never, you know, or I couldn't have expected them to be conjoining these different styles, and some of them that had never played with or used electronics, or what they're doing with the electronics now, or how they're incorporating electronics and improvisation into their work. And basically it's been word of mouth that people have been finding out about it. And I found my first student at the Midwest Band and Orchestra Conference, mm-hmm. about 4 years ago, just randomly speaking to this violinist from Spain and talking about this program, and he got intrigued, and he was our first one to sign up for
cool.
it, and in the first class. And so what that's done also is that it's the word has gotten out, so we actually have more students from Spain that have come over to the program.
Oh, wow.
We have a presence in Peru. We have a bunch of Peruvian students. We have now a student from Turkey and Brazil coming in. So
fantastic.
As well as, you know, New Jerseyites and,
right.
and a couple of people from Texas, et cetera. So it's really become a place, a global a global collection, I guess.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
And the other thing that, you know, what happened when we were starting this and why the master's degree happened first was because of what happened to all the school programs during COVID. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's now taken a few years to start rebuilding those programs, because even that you could do a certain amount online.
Yeah. But it was awful.
Yeah.
It was awful. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's another conversation I'd love to have with you at another
sure.
time, but yeah. So now is when and you can speak to that, what you've been doing over the last few years to rebuild your program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a, behavioral, habitual building good habits. It's technical. There's like all these, components that, really having to focus on in different ways. Depending on the year, the kid, and even the class that comes through, like every class is just a little different. Some of them require more of this, some of them require more of that. So it's really interesting to see the differences, and then just try and find strategies to get them to come back, you know, back to where it was. I think we're getting there, but it's sure it's taking a long time. long time.
I started a summer program. Just it's like a week long.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you have something that's like more PD based rather than like a degree. So tell us about your summer.
Yeah, so I started the Multi-Style String Symposium, and that's it's a three or 4 days professional development teachers for. It started out just for music teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And the first year we had Regina Carter and Jeremy Kittle and Dave Egger and myself. And the second year we had Joe Denenzone and his Sweet Plantain Quartet. And so each year is a different focus.
Cool.
And this past year we had Tracy Silverman.
Oh, yeah. He's amazing. I've actually talked to him a little bit and wanted to get him on here too so we could talk about his tromboing method and all that. You know, because it's really interesting and really cool. I bet that was just awesome to have Tracy there.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It really was amazing. And we opened up for the first time to high school and college students to be able to come in.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
And then we also ended up with.
Was that like high school, college students along with, in service teachers at the same
yes.
time? Cool.
Yes.
So everybody learns together. That's great.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was really a great way of for them to not just networking, but learning from each other too. Because there's a lot of people at different levels, different skill levels, mm-hmm. different experiences, and then we ended up with some a program from Jamaica, the country of Jamaica, that wants to start a string program over there. Sent some of their teachers to learn from us, and now we're collaborating with them and starting a string program over
very cool.
in Jamaica. So each year it evolves, and then just because of the feedback that I get each year from, and we've had people that come back again and again.
Yeah, well, and if you have different guests every year, it's never the same thing every year.
Right, and now we've incorporated all performing. And Tracy's just amazing. So he, you know, talking about improvisation and stromboing. And so it was a very intense and, you know.
Yeah. And when is it, you have one scheduled for this summer?
We don't have the dates set yet. Usually it's either at the end of July or beginning of August.
Okay, perfect.
So that's to be determined.
Yeah.
But we've also... started to do symposiums for middle school and high schoolers. where they come to the university. And we did our first one in October. Nice. And we had 300 students.
Wow.
Just from, mostly schools in New Jersey. We had a few from the city in Westchester, mm-hmm. Long Island. And these are, you know, the string programs that are being reinvigorated.
Good.
And they were, I think they weren't sure what to expect. And it was a partial concert. So we had, I played, Joe Denon's own played, and some of my students. So they were hearing electric instruments with the electronics, with backing tracks.
Yeah.
With other ways of creating music and performing music.
Things they may not have heard before.
Right.
And things that might inspire them to like want to do that or explore on their own instrument.
Yes.
I know I have a lot of my students are afraid, you know, to like break out of the mold of I'm reading a piece of music and it goes from here to there and that's what we do. And, you know, so for me, it's one of those things that I try to get my kids to kind of think differently and not be afraid to play off the page. And so we took a trip to Asheville last year and we had a 4-hour workshop with Chris Howes and it was just off the charts amazing. The kids just loved, like, yeah. We didn't have any sheet music at all. And he did 4 hours with them and they couldn't believe by the end they were playing stuff and feeling yeah. really, really open and free. And it's just a great feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. So another thing that I do is I, you know, create, we need repertoire. So I'm a big fan of this Cuban salsa reggaeton band called Gente de Zona.
Gente de
Zona. And in fact, when I was on Tracy Silverman's podcast, I'm like, Tracy, and he asks, you know, what you want to jam on. I'm like, I want to jam on La Gozadera. And I'm still obsessed with it. So I actually created an arrangement for string orchestra that we did at the symposium with Tracy.
Oh, nice. Is that available to look at or purchase?
It is available. And we're also going to do, it got accepted to do a reading at this year at ASTA.
Oh, great. And is that available? Is it available through one of the major publishers or are you self-publishing or?
It's self-published and I'm going to send you the link so you can.
Okay. I have your website pulled up here is it on your website?
It's so new that I don't know if it's okay. on the website yet.
Okay. But yeah, send me the
it's
link.
All over Facebook. Oh, yeah, my bad. I also have different ways of procuring the score and the parts that also come with coaching, mm-hmm. virtual coaching, or even, you know, performance where I'll come in, personally coach, and perform with the students.
That's great.
And we had claves going, we had egg shakers going, then we ended up with, you know, everybody dancing around. There's a video on my YouTube channel.
Oh, cool.
So the information is there, but I'm going to shoot it over to you.
That'd be great. I'll put it in the description of the video here. I can do an edit on that and put that in there. Very cool.
Yeah. So, I talked a lot.
It was all great. You know, so inspiring to know that there's some really different things out there that I think a lot of us get just into this mainstream of doing the same things. So I think this is really cool that you have this offering and this interest for something that's just completely different from what most people know. And that it's starting to become more widespread. And, you know, thanks to the work that you've been doing all these years, you know, like I said, over the years, I've been to almost every ASTA conference since the very first one. And I always see you there and there's just, you have great information to share and it's just really cool. So I appreciate you being on the podcast today.
Oh yeah. My pleasure. And, anybody has any questions, you know, about the program, about multi-style string playing, they're welcome to get in touch through my my website. I'm on Instagram at Elec Viola.
Elec Viola. Okay.
Cool. Elec Viola. And then everybody cross your fingers that we win a Grammy.
That would be amazing. So when are the Grammys?
So the Grammys are February 4th.
Okay.
Monday, February 4th. And I started to say it's my string quartet is featured on this album of music by Carla Petullo, who is an amazing composer that we met during a film scoring workshop mm-hmm. years ago. And she's mainly known as a film composer. She's based out in LA. Mm. And this project came out of a big life-changing moment for her.
Okay.
She had an illness and yeah. she wasn't sure if she was going to make it through.
Wow.
And so she was inspired to just the raw energy that comes with being in that moment and created a beautiful album called So She Howls, and where she's singing and howling. And I mean, not, it's gorgeous.
Cool.
And full string writing. She's got a choir from LA, Tonality on it. And it got nominated for a Grammy in the New Age category.
New Age. Okay. So we'll be looking for the New Age category, and you guys are going to be on there.
Yeah.
That's going to be great.
It won't be on the, you know, the evening show. Like that.
Right, the TV. Yeah, they don't get to put everything on there, unfortunately.
Like, yeah, that's just the very top of the feed. But they have a wonderful ceremony for the rest of us.
The rest of us.
So by that time, hopefully we'll have won that. But
yeah.
The joy of being in the studio and collaborating with my quartet, with Carla, with the other musicians and producers. That's really what it's all about. And to keep those, keep the possibilities open mm-hmm. and keep those boundaries murky.
Yeah, yeah. Or it's limitless what you can do when you start,
it really is. You never know. And I always say there's something out there you don't know that you don't know that you're missing it.
You got to keep an open mind and
say yes, collaborate.
Yes. Yep.
I mean, I got to do a show, a duo collaboration with one of my idols this year with Laurie Anderson. We played at the Cafe Carlisle.
Mm.
And she was somebody that influenced me from way back, same time as Jean-Luc Ponty, and to be, to be on the same stage with her and having that collaborative back and forth. In fact, we're going to be playing together again at the end of February at the Tibet House concert, Carnegie Hall. So I think it's February 26th. So anybody in New York, my Scorcio Quartet will be up on stage there backing everybody.
Right. That's amazing.
And playing with Lori. So, stay in touch.
It's cool when you're like, cause you're a superstar. And then when you get to meet your idol, it's like, wow. Like, that's just really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool to hear that.
Super cool.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much, Martha, for being here. And I hope this was, for everybody listening, I hope this was a fun to hear Martha's story and learn about what she's done and just kind of think about strings in a different way. But the multi-style strings is super awesome. There'll be a bunch of great sessions at ASTA on this topic as well, and multiple topics. You definitely want to check it out. So, but thank you so much for being here again.
Awesome. My pleasure. I look forward to seeing you there, Charles. And anybody that's watching this, give a shout out. And look forward to seeing you in the world of multi-style strings.
Awesome. Thank you again, Martha. All right, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for watching our episode 68 of the Orchestra Teacher Podcast. We will see you next time. It's a crazy time in the teaching world right now with everybody getting ready for adjudication and whatnot. But I hope that you'll enjoy your 2024. We'll see you soon. Thank you for tuning in. For resources and more information about the Orchestra Teacher website, podcast, and YouTube channel, visit www.orchestrateacher.net.